Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review. This is a special show. It's our first show in the we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Trainer of Champions. And on the line right now, we have our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hello. Welcome to 2019.
Yeah, 2019, our new year, but the same problems keep our show is being hacked. That means we're doing well and we're drawing a lot of attention where, you know, the player haters want to hate on us, but the show keeps going.
Yeah, I can't stop us with that. bring more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what they say, ignorance is curable, but stupid is forever. Stupid is what stupid does on a constant basis.
You can't fix stupid, yeah. That's the one I know. You can't fix stupid.
but moving right along, Bob, there's so much going on around the world in boxing with Mayweather doing his his exhibition over there in Japan. Let's go into the news and let's see what we got. I know there's not a lot of happening, but there is some news.
Right, yeah. Before we get started, I just want to give a shout-out to your brother, Dougie. I understand he went through surgery yesterday, and he's doing fine. So, you know, we're big fans. We hope he, you know, continues to recover. So just a little shout-out to your bro.
Yeah, he's recovering pretty good. Doug's a tough old veteran, Army veteran. You know, it's hard to hold them guys down. And he's wiggling and wobbling, but he's continuing to fight, and the Lord keeps blessing him. We hope that the Lord keeps blessing him through his endeavor with this sickness. You know what I mean? But look, Bob, we also had some deaths around the world in boxing before you get into the boxing news.
Sure.
Mr. Reyes with Reyes boxing gloves, you know, what a gentleman and a scholar, Bob, you know.
Right.
He was a man that loved boxing. He boxed himself. You know, this company been around for a long time. He passed at 83 years old. But, Bob, he supported me a lot through my boxing career. Whenever I would need equipment and gloves, he would send me gloves, head cup, gears, whatever he had, T-shirts, whatever. And then in North Carolina, when we did that kids thing with the WBC, he sent all the boxing equipment he did to sponsor it. He says, Aaron, man, you're doing a good job with the program. He said, I'm going to support it. You know, Mauricio Suleiman, Jose Suleiman, Jill Diamond, and him, they put it all together, gave all of us medals to hand out to the people. And, man, what a great sponsor, man. He didn't let us want for nothing, and we were able to do those kids' things down there in North Carolina, man. He's going to be well missed, I'm pretty sure. His family's going to miss him, but the boxing family is going to miss him. You know, his gloves were known as the puncher's gloves, Bob. The puncher's gloves. And, boy, God bless me to have a lot of great punchers. And, man, them guys like to wear that glove, boy. It was something. And you had to be very smart and very clever to wear those type of gloves because they were cut in a way that fit real nice to your hand. The balance in the glove was balanced. There wasn't too much on the front hand part of the glove. They were equally, the weight was equally proportioned on the glove. The same weight that was on the hand part of the glove was on the wrist part of the glove that balanced the weight out, you know, and that's what made it a good form-fitting glove, man. And I know the people in Mexico, where they were located, is going to miss him, and the boxing world is going to miss him, man, because he brings some nice equipment.
Does, yeah, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. Yeah, well, that's a nice tribute. Thank you. Hey, you know, I just want to throw out some other good news here for people wondering. We've been following, but Adonis Stevenson, he's continued to recover, and he started talking this week and moving his hands and feet and recognizing his family. Still faces an uphill battle, more cranial surgery, but it's good report there that he's at least conscious and talking and moving. So just wanted to pass that along to you too. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, those type of things, Bob, are the freak things of fatality of sports. They happen in every sport. You know, it happens in football, basketball. You know, certain injuries, you know, people, death is in those crucial injuries are a small part of life. It ain't the big part of life, but it does happen. There is a risk factor. However, the people at ringside did the right thing. And he's able to recover. You know what I mean? And this is why it's so important, Bob, when we talk about fighter safeties. Fighter safety is always first and foremost. And this is why people have to be well-versed with the updated things of training. And one main thing that happens a lot in the gyms, too, where a lot of guys get injured. You know, guys get knocked out in the gym, and a lot of trainers don't know what and how to respond to an athlete when they're injured in the gym. And this becomes an important factor because they carry that injury over into competition and where other people, it's mass. You know, and not have been aware of that, and certain tests may miss it at the time. But there's very things like to know, like CPR. You know, oxygen is a crucial thing when a guy gets that type of injury in the gym. They have to get oxygen fed to them right away, you know, when they're out like that.
Right,
and you got to know CPR. You got to know, you know, how to read a person's heart rate and things like that, because those things are crucial. And athletic trainer, sports trainer should know those sports-specific things when it comes to injury and what to do, because timing is an important factor. And by that, you know, a lot of commissions made it mandatory that emergency vehicle has to be at the fight, and they have to have oxygen and stuff there for just this purpose. And those quick things and those quick thinking may have saved the young man's life. And thank God that he's recovering.
Right. Yeah, it's good news. Okay, so as you mentioned, we have kind of a quiet weekend. Not too much happening around the world as 2019 settles in, but we'll start at the Shrine Temple in Macon, Georgia, USA, where Cruiserweight Johnny Langston, he's 4-0, 2 KOs, battles Brad Austin, 13-29. Then we go down to Las Varillas in Cordoba, Argentina, where the headliner is the middleweight matchup of Gonzalo Gaston Correa, 14-2, 5 KOs, versus Martin Ezequiel Bulacio, who's 8-2 with 6 KOs, who is fighting in his hometown. We noticed that last week for the New Year's holiday, a lot of people fighting, especially in South America, in their hometown. There we go again in Argentina. And the co-main event there will feature Tomas Andres Reynoso, 13-3-1, stepping in against fellow middleweight Herman Ignacio Peralta, who's 6-4-5. That's a scheduled 10-rounder, and that'll be on the Argentine Thai C Sports Network. That's the only thing really happening on TV this weekend. Over in Suzhou, China, they host the fight for the WBC Silver Light Flyweight crown between the current champion, Jin Jiang, who's 15-4-2, and Sirion Sathorn, who's 59-6, 40 KOs. And he's one of those fighters out of Thailand who just fights all the time. Also on the card, Wang Fengyi, 11-0, 6 KOs, puts his WBO International Flyweight title up against Jamil Magramo, 22-1, 18 KOs, and his WBO Oriental flyweight belt. Yan Wang, 7-1, and Sung Young Yang, 6-2-4, vie for the vacant WBO Oriental Youth Super Bantamweight title. And it's Zhang Li, 3-0, versus Arvin Yurong, 12-1, for the Open WBO Oriental Youth Lightweight Championship. And in Mogoway, Philippines, unbeaten bantamweight Ray Nagelman, 6-0-1, takes on Albert Alcoy, 15-27-8. Other things we want to note, though, something happened this week. We heard about the event at the 2300 Arena in Philly. That's going to take place Friday, February 8th, as promoted by Michelle Rosado of Raising Babe. This will be her first solo promotion, so we wish her good luck. She's dubbed tonight the Philly Special. She's got South Philly's undefeated bantamweight Christian Carto, 7-0, 18 KOs, battling Victor Ruiz, who's 22-10 with 15 KOs. And also South Philly heavyweight Sonny Canto. He just turned pro. He signed a multi-year deal with Top Rank, and he'll be fighting on that undercard. And last week we had our little thing with the country of the year, and I gave special mention to Mexico, primarily for the fact that they had two all-female cards last year, one in Monterrey and one in Mexico City. And we found out this week Lou DiBella, the promoter, is working with Showtime for a spring all-female card, possibly at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And he has anywhere from 2 to 4 world title fights. 2 are confirmed, and 1 is a really good one, looking at the new WBO champ Heather Hardy taking on Jelena Mrdjanovic, who is the lady from Hay River, New Northwest Territories in Canada. She's up there by the Mackenzie River, way up north. She has the WBC and WBA titles in the featherweight division, so that's a big one, the WBO, WBC, WBA unification. And also WBA super middleweight champion Alicia Napoleon will take on the WBC champ Franchon Cruz Deserve. And those two fights are at least one, and Clarissa Shields is being mentioned in that card as well, too. So it's nice to see. Good luck with Lou DiBella with that, too, because it's nice to see the all-female card. We talked about those when they were happening in Mexico, and giving it a shot here, too. And just one other news from the heavyweight division. We'll get on with this, too. We mentioned his name earlier, Mauricio Suleiman. Well, this week he okayed Wilder Fury 2. He said that's good with him. Joshua will be next if they couldn't work it out. But once again, that pushes Dominic Brazil, who's been trying to get that championship fight. He's the mandatory challenger. And since he lost to Joshua back in 16, he's only gone out and won by KOs 3 straight times. So he's just going to get going, too. That's the latest from the heavyweights.
Let me say this. Frank Warren has confirmed that the talks are going on, for this massive rematch between Dante Wilder and Tyson Fury. His rival Hearns, he's admitting that now that, it don't look like it's going to be Anthony, Joshua, and Wilder.
Joshua might end up with white then again, too, in an all-UK thing.
Yeah, in all-UK thing. So that April date, even Warren say it looks like Fury's in line for the return. So he's looking at the situation. He's saying, hey, well, it looks like, we done pushed this thing along as far as we can go with it. I don't believe that he planned on fighting either one of them, but to keep their man's name in ink, Anthony Joshua in ink, is because Tyson Fury and Wilder's the fight now that everybody wants to see. However, Anthony Joshua is the big-time draw with the big-time numbers, with, like you all the time say, Bob, with that big-time gate numbers. He sells, puts butts in the seats, and that's what big time boxing's all about, man. So
right,
what else
yeah.
we got going on, Bob?
That's pretty much all I have right now for the week. We just wanted to mention that, that the Joshua, as you said, Eddie Hearn has been trying to contact Wilder's people, just not getting any response, which makes you believe that, they're leaning towards Wilder Fury too. And I think Eddie Hearn's finally getting to that as well. But also, just wanted to also talk about Michelle Rosado, Raging Babe there. That's we're talking about her first solo promotion, taking on the 2300 Arena in Philly for that big night, Philly Special night. And a couple of good Philly champions are coming up out of there too, you know, the undefeated bantamweight, Christian Cardo, and then this heavyweight, the young man, Sonny Kanto, turning pro, signing a big deal with Top Rank also.
Yeah. You know, we have Henry Haskup hanging in the queue, but before we get to Henry, you know, it looks like Amir Khan is going to fight Terrence Crawford on April 20th in Madison Square Garden. So, hey, you know, Amir Khan has bid a chip off the old block again for the big blockbusters. So let's see, you know, Terrence Crawford is a guy that can outright fight. You know, you come in the ring with he got to be ready. He when you're going up with somebody like that, hey man, if you're not ready, you're going to bite the dust, man, because Terrence Crawford can outright fight, man. I mean, this guy is biting at the bit to be one of the big mega stars. He can fight outright.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh, yeah. And a lot of people have him on their top. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their top pound for
a,
pound guy. You know, people like
him. He needs a PR team behind him.
Yeah,
Terrence Crawford,
a PR
second
team.
To none. And
yeah.
But if Amir Khan can pull off the upset, it would be a major, major, major upset in boxing. It would be big. You know,
right.
You know, so we're looking at that. And, you know, that fight. And also with Manny Pacquiao here coming up shortly here with Broner.
Broner, yeah.
Yeah, we
looks
had
like
talked
the fight's still going to go on. Yeah, however, Broner working out his problems.
Yeah.
But it's so far the fight's still on, too.
Yeah.
And yeah, we want to, before we bring Henry into, let's get back to that. This talk about the New Year's Eve thing with Mayweather too. You know, he it was kind of a real quick in and out for him. You know, he came in, killed the guy in the first round, and walked away. So, you know, but you said he's opening up new markets. Went
yeah.
there, took on a local favorite, you know, and was Mayweather. Yeah. So
well,
he's still
I
saying
think...
he's not coming back to do any other boxing, but you know, that's always how they say.
Yeah, well, I think Mayweather promotions are listening to us pretty good. Remember we had talked about the Asian markets, how they're selling tickets and pay-per-view and things like that, and whoever be the one to go over in that market and grab those fans on their side. I think Mayweather heard the cry, and he's over there trying to get them. And when you're talking about putting on an exhibition and getting multi-millions of dollars like he got, man, that is truly something special.
Yeah, yeah, it is, really. I mean, yeah. Yeah. He's
that's
a money man. I'll
truly,
tell you, you know that. We all know that.
He's the money man. They say what they want about Mayweather. He is the money man. But, hey, look, man, you're talking about a money guy. When you're talking Henry Haskop, he's the man with the big dollars, the big holler. Our boxing historian, Henry Haskop. Welcome to the World Boxing Review Radio Show, Henry.
Thank you, Aaron. I guess we got some good news this week about your brother and also Stevenson. So better than last week when we had a bunch of deaths. So I'm very happy to hear. You know, them two are back onto the road of recovery. So, you know, my prayers go out to them and you and your family. So, hopefully, you know, things work out.
Yeah, but there was some other, you know, in New Jersey, right? There was some other deaths and things like that. Can you mention some of them? I think you're doing something.
You know, yeah, Troy Browning, he passed away. He was only 51. So, you know, he had a bad liver. And then, of course, Al Cerdo, told you about that last week. I went out and performed the eulogy, and I do that nine count. And they had a tremendous crowd there. I mean, you know, it was almost wall-to-wall people, you know, as far as, you know, the boxing people were there, his family were there. I mean, you know, a lot of champions and a lot of people that he managed and trained were there. And, you know, we had a really good send-off. Murad Muhammad, they told me he was going to speak too. So, you know, he spoke for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, when you give a promoter like that, you know, Mike, you know, you might as well sit down and you could take a snooze for a while.
Bring your lunch, bring your dinner, bring everything.
Yeah.
You're going to be a while.
Yeah, even Danny Milano, who's going to speak after him because he wanted to bring up the fighters, and that's, you know, El Cerdo is his uncle. And, you know, he was rolling his eyes, like, you know, when is this going to end, you know, so, but, you know, it was good. It was a good send-off, and, you know, like I said, people came from all over the place, and it was nice, so that was a good thing, so, but today, you know, we'll talk about Henry Armstrong. You know, he's rated as one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters that ever stepped into the ring. I mean, you know, most people rate him up there just below probably Sugar Ray Robinson, you know, as far as pound-for-pound fighters. Now, he was born on December 12th. Now, for years, they said it was December 12th, 1912, so it was 12-12-12. But then, I don't know, just lately, they did, you know, with this ancestry and everything like this. And, you know, they found out that he was probably born in 1909, you know, 3 years later. Huh. But, you know, it's not that important. But he really got into boxing because he found out when Kid Chocolate fought Al Singer in 1929 at the Polo Grounds, Kid Chocolate made $75,000. And he said, holy cow, you know, that's more money than I'll make in a whole lifetime. I said, why don't I take boxing? So he became an amateur fighter. And, you know, he was pretty good. And then, you know, he only had a couple of fights. But then he went pro and fought underneath the name of Melody Jackson. And his real name, Henry Armstrong's real name was Henry Jackson. And so he fought underneath that. And he got stopped in the third round. He just ran out of gas, and the guy just pundled him. And the guy had 16 fights, and he had none, you know, at the time. So then he had another fight just about a week later, and he would win that. Then he went to California with his trainer, a guy by the name of Harry Armstrong. And, you know, he kind of took up his name and had one professional fight out there. And he lost that one, too. And then he wanted to turn amateur, you know, again. And, of course, that's against the rules. But he did it anyway. He took the name of Henry Armstrong. That's how he got the name of Henry. And he was telling everybody he was Harry's little brother. So he did very well. He won quite a few fights. He fought almost every week, and even entered what they called the Olympic trials. They had a lot of tournaments out there, and the winners used to fight each other, and, you know, eventually they become, you know, elite, and the winner of the whole thing would eventually go to the Olympics. You know, I mean, he made it quite far, but not far enough. You know, he kind of fizzled out at the end, and he lost. So then he turned pro again, and he lost his first two fights. So after, I think, five fights, he only had one win with four losses. And I figured, hey, what kind of future does he have? But then he put it together. And the next, I guess, 30-some fights, he only lost like one or two. And he start really, you know, banging out things. And in 1933 and 34, he had a string of I guess it was 27 knockouts in a row, which is, you know, one of the, you know, I mean, the record is supposed to be 44 by Lamar Clark, but he put all tomato cans, and so did Billy Fox. But he had 27 knockouts in a row and against, you know, fairly good opponents. And then in 1936, Al Jolson and George Raft, you know, the entertainers, took an interest in Armstrong and kind of guided his career. Yeah, this guy named Eddie Mead. He became his, like, manager and everything. Yeah, he was just a front guy, but actually Jolson and Raft were in charge of him. And he really took off then. And in 1937, he had one of the best years of any fighter in history. He had 27 fights in 1 year, in one calendar year. He won all 27, and he won 26 by knockout, you know. And he also became the featherweight champion of the world when he knocked out Petey Saran, you know, in the sixth round, become the featherweight champion. And then in 1938.
They fight in Madison Square Garden. They fought in Madison Square Garden, right?
I don't know if it was the Garden. I don't know if it was the Garden or not, because he,
okay.
You know, but I'll check that out.
I think so.
Yeah, he might have at that time. You know, I have all the records of the Madison Square Garden, the fights.
Right.
But he was, he was starting to fight the elite. And anyway,
right.
he became the champion. Yeah, it was Madison Square Garden. It was Arthur Donovan was actually the referee. And
right.
You know, so he became the champion, the featherweight champion of the world at that time. And then, of course, you know, in 1938, he continued his assault on people. And then, you know, he defended his title several times, but he fought. You know, he wanted to have another title because there was another guy that was taking all the headlines, and his name was Joe Louis, because Joe Louis became the heavyweight champion, of course, in 1937, and then he beat Smelling in 38, and he was the talk of everybody. So Henry wanted to say, you know, how can I match that or top that? So he tried to go for the lightweight championship of the world, but Lou Ambrose really didn't want that much to do with him at that time. So he jumped over from 126 all the way up to 147. So he skipped two weight divisions. Today it would be four weight divisions because they didn't have a junior champion at that time. So then he fought Barney Ross for the welterweight championship of the world, and that was at the Madison Square Garden Bowl in Long Island City. And he won that very easily, a unanimous decision. He won like 11 or 12 of the rounds by all the scorecards, 10 on the other one, and he became the welterweight champion of the world. Then he went back down, I think it was like 2.5 months later, and he fought Lou Ambrose for the lightweight title, and he won that. So he had all three, you know, he had three simultaneously titles from featherweight, then he won the welterweight, then he won the lightweight. And his next fight was against Garza, he beat him. But that was he defended his welterweight title against him. And then a few fights after that, he would lose his lightweight title to Ambrose. But two of the judges scored it 8-7. But Arthur Donovan was the referee, and he took 5 rounds away from Armstrong because of low blows and stuff, because Armstrong was a whirlwind hitter. You know, he would use his shoulders, he would use his elbows, and, you know, some of the punches, you know, strayed a little low. And, you know, he took 5 rounds away from him. So, at that time, you know, Armstrong gave up the featherweight title at that, you know, before that. And then, you know, he was still the welterweight champion of the world. Then, of course, he wanted to go against Garza again because Garza became the middleweight champion, you know, through California and New York styles. And, you know, he fought Garza trying to get that middleweight title. And although most people thought he won, you know, the verdict was a draw. So, you know, so he went back, you know, to the welterweight division. And, you know, he defended his title 19 times. You know, 19 times, you know, against some of the best opposition. And, you know, you know, that's probably still a record, I believe, for a welterweight. And, you know, at one time he had 72 fights from, I believe it was, let's see, it was from March of 1936 to October 1940. He had 72 fights. He won 69. He only lost 2, and he had 1 draw. The 2 he lost was 1 to Ambrose, when that five rounds were taken away. Another one he lost by disqualification, and the draw was against Garza. So he was, you know, 72 fights, and, you know, he hardly really, he could have won every one of them. And 56 knockouts he scored at that time. You know, then of course,
What was his total record, Henry? It was, didn't he have over 180-some fights, something like that?
Yeah, he did have about 183 or something like that fights. You know, he won 152. You know, he lost 22. Of course, a lot of the losses that he had was at the beginning of his career when he had them four losses right away, and at the end of his career when he was, you know, well past his prime. Now, he fought a number of world champions, you know, during that time. He fought actually 18 different world champions and beat 16 of them. And he also fought 13. Yeah, he also fought 13 Hall of Famers, and he beat 11 out of the 13. The only two that he couldn't beat was Bo Jack and Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, and but that was after his prime. You know, his prime was probably from, you know, in somewhere in the 1936, 37, 38, and 39, even into the 1940s. I mean, there was hardly anyone that can really stand toe-to-toe with him. He just was a non-stop fighter. He didn't stop punching. And, you know, like I said before, he's rated, like even by Ring Magazine, you know, the top 80 best fighters in the last 80 years. They rated him number two. The International Boxing Hall of Fame inducted him in 1990. And, you know, I mean, after his career, he actually became an alcoholic, you know, but he conquered that and became a minister, you know, and, you know, he was a man of God until, I guess, the time he passed away at the age of, well, it says 78. That's if you count 1909. He passed away in 1988. So, I mean, you know, he had a wonderful career. I mean, the guy, you know, he fought everybody, and he had 101 knockouts, you know, during his career. And, you know, he was only stopped twice. That was in his first bout, and he really wasn't in shape for that. And when he lost his title against Fritzy Zivic, he lost it, you know, after, you know, when I'm saying that them 72 fights and he won 69, you know, his 73rd fight was against Fritzy Zivic, and he lost a close decision. But in return match, you know, he was stopped. And, you know, it was all downhill from then. I mean, he wasn't, you know, I mean, his style wasn't one that was going to have any longevity, you know. I mean, it's like Joe Frazier. You know, I mean, Nat Flasher, you know, had, you know, put out a list of, let's say, the most aggressive fighters in boxing history. Joe Frazier, he rated number two, and Henry Armstrong, he rated number one. So that's how great, you know, this guy was. And like I said, if anybody, you know, anybody that's anybody in boxing, you know, the experts or in boxing historians and everything like this, they rate Henry Armstrong right up there. Just probably below the average historian would rate him just below, you know, Sugar Ray Robinson. And, you know, maybe if he fought Robinson.
He won the Ring Magazine. He won the Ring Magazine's award, right, in the 30s, right?
Yeah.
And,
well,
boxers, 1937. Writers, all of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was, like I said, voted as one of the top, you know, fighters of all time. Ring Magazine in 1937. I mean, it was hard to beat him because, you know, I mean, Lewis won the title, you know, against Braddock, but Armstrong, like I said, had 27 fights in 1937, and he won all 27 and 26 by knockout. You know, it's hard, you know, it's hard to top that, you know. You know,
and at that time, you know, the old thing was it was hard for fighters to be in California and Hollywood and come out and fight very well.
Oh, yeah, he was even in a movie.
Able
you know.
to, Yeah.
Yeah, he was
that's
even
right.
in a movie at the time. So, so he, you know, like I said, he was one of the top fighters. I mean, he fought, you know, just about every other week when he was prime, you know. So, you know, I mean, he did defend his title, like I said, 19 times. But the only downside of it was that most of them were against non-contenders. And that's not his fault. He just wanted to fight. Anybody that came along, he would fight. I think it was only four of the 19 that were actually rated in the top 10. But, again, you know, some of these guys didn't even want to fight him. You know, they just didn't.
People have to realize, too, as the money is greater now, the money wasn't great like that.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the other thing I was going to try to get to. You know, it's the times. You know, people say, well, you know, Sugar Robinson had like 200 fights. You know, Archie Moore had like 240 fights. You know, I said, but if they were fighting today, they wouldn't have to fight that many times. You know, I mean, you know, they you know, to make money, you know, them days, you had to fight a lot more often than you do today. You know, you fight, you know, I laugh when, you know, the commentator said, well, he had a busy year this year. He fought four times. I said, oh, my God, four times. You know, you know, I mean, that's, you know, very active. You know, the record is 58 times. I mean, you know, if you fight.
Who has that record, Henry?
Well,
if you can
a couple of them. Jack
of
Kidberg
head.
And a guy named Wick Ware or Warwick. You know, that guy had like 400 and some fights, though. I mean, I always get his name mixed up. It's either Wick Ware or Warwick. You know, but, you know, these guys have tremendous amount of fights. I mean, you know, I mean, it just goes down, you know, all these things. But,
it's a lot harder to do, you know, too, because of the rules of the commission and all of that. You know, used to be a journey. Guys used to take you, you know, you go through the South, get warmed up, go out west. When you go out west, then you come back over the top and fight as you're in the car traveling.
It's all traveling. That's the thing.
By the time you're fighting
every other week, you're in the car and you're living out of your suitcase.
You go across Michigan and Chicago and then you're ready for the big time in the big city called New York.
But
those
days
are long
said,
since passed.
They had a
and
fight back then.
And it's a lot slower traveling back then, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't get from one end of the country to the other like in a day. You know, you had to travel by, you know, train or car. Yeah. Took a long time to get from here to there. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's another thing. A lot of these fighters, you know, their records aren't even, you know, listed. You know, I mean, it's, you know, they're just, you know, they're never going to be found. A lot of these, you know, old-time records they have out there because it's just, you know, these guys, they fought like every other week, and if it wasn't in the papers, you know, it would be hard, very hard to list.
To track it.
You know? Yeah, to track these guys.
Right.
You know, it's
and,
just...
And a lot of times a guy might have fought down south as Michael Joe, and then when by the time he ends up in California, he's Pete Joseph.
I think I said Berg was had 58. It's actually a Ted Kidd Lewis in 1911. He had 58 fights. It was Ted Kidd Lewis and a guy by the name of Len Wickwar. I mean, Len Wickwar had 58 fights in 1934, 53 in 1935. I mean, you know, so he just fought like every week, I mean, during his career. I mean, the big fighters like Harry Greb in 1919, he had like 45 fights, you know, in 1919. So, I mean, Ted Kidd Lewis was a world champion. He's probably, you know, the best fighter that had over, you know, I mean, you know, the, well, he had 58 fights. He, you know, as far as world champions go, he's number one as far as fights in a year. And then, and then you got Harry Greb, and Young Stripling is up there. He had 39 fights, and you know, but you know, to have 27 fights in 1 year and win all 27, and 26 knockouts. I mean, you know, you're really doing something there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's bring it up to date. In the dim weight classes, the three weight classes that he won titles, in today, how would he fare amongst the elite in those places?
Well,
just using speculation in terms of records and the things of accomplishment.
Well, I think he would do very well. See, the thing is, when he was the welterweight champion of the world, Armstrong, most of the time his weight was actually under the lightweight limit. You know, I mean, he only weighed like 135 pounds, and he was defending his 147-pound championship, you know, and he was like outweighed all these bouts, you know, because his best fighting weight was under 140. And he would have been right there with everybody, you know, no matter what, you know, I don't care what. You know, you can go back, you know, 100 years, or you can go up to today. I mean, you get a guy like Henry Armstrong with his work ethic, you know, of coming in, you know, never stopping.
Mm-hmm.
He was noted for that. You know, he just if you watch films of him, you could see him using his shoulders to maneuver somebody into a position so he could hit him. You know, and it's very subtle. I mean, you really got to look at it. And, you know, the way he did it, it's just, you know, he was ahead of his time there. I mean, he just, you know, a tireless guy. You know, today, you know, guys, you know, they box a couple of rounds and they're ready for, you know, a sauna.
They take
know.
A break.
Yeah, they want to take a break and everything. But you know, this Armstrong, you know, you watch films of him. I mean, he was full force from the first round up into the 15th. You know, he was a nonstop fighter.
Yeah, when you see a buzzsaw going.
Yeah, well, he was.
When that chain
good word
gone,
for him.
He was a buzzsaw. He was a buzzsaw. When he kept going, he was nonstop action, offense and defense. He was going to try to do something to make something happen and knock you out. But, Henry, how hard, you know, it's very difficult to hold three belts in three different weight classes at the same time.
Yeah, well, like
that's,
I said, he won the featherweight.
That's a difficult task.
Yeah, I mean, first half of his career was really, you know, in the featherweight division. So when he won that, you know, really, nobody really wanted to fight him in the featherweight division. I mean, if he stayed in featherweight, he would probably be rated as the best featherweight champion of all time. But, you know, he was so good, and he wanted to, you know, he's seen Joe Louis, and Joe Louis was, the idol of so many people. You know, he wanted at least, you know, compete against him. So he wanted to do something that Louis couldn't do. And, you know, Louis is a heavyweight. He can't go up and wait there. So, I mean, when he won the welterweight title, you know, and then, he gave up the featherweight and, you know, he lost the lightweight. He just stayed the featherweight. He didn't have to cut weight, you know, because he was always in shape. You know, he's always weighed under 140 most of his career. And, you know, he was just, like I said, he would have stayed with any of these welterweights today and probably beat just about everyone, if not everyone. I mean, you know, if you rate the top welterweights of all time, you'd probably say maybe Sugar Ray Robinson was number one, but, you know, Armstrong could be number two. I mean, you know, that's how good he was. And, you know, as far as the three weight classes, like I said, he did give up, you know, the featherweight because, you know, he wasn't going to go down to 126, you know, every other week and, you know, defend his title there and then go up to, you know, into the high 130s to defend his welterweight title. So, you know, he had to give up something. And, you know, at that time, the welterweight title was more like glamorous. You know, he had the Barney Rosses and everything like this. And, you know, he was just, you know, he would make more money at the welterweight class.
Yeah, and you know, he had a bit of the Irish in him too. and Native American. So
yeah, he had Native American. His mother, and you know, but you know, he had a lot of heart and a lot of guts, and like I said, you know, he was just a nonstop fighter that that everybody, like, if he was fighting today, he'd be like a multimillionaire, because everybody would want to see him. Like, he, you know, I mean, you know, certain fighters that you know, you look forward to seeing. I mean, Mayweather, yeah. You know, I like Mayweather and everything like this, but most people don't want to really see him fight because it's not exciting. You know, he's a defensive fighter. I mean, if I had a, you know, pick a fighter, let's say even like what kind of fighter would I want to be if I was in that? Would I want to be Henry Armstrong or Mayweather? I'd probably say Mayweather, because I'd come out with all my marbles, you know, because,
right,
you know, he didn't take chances, and he made mega bucks. Where, but if I want to watch a fight, you know, who do you want to watch? You want to watch Mayweather, or you want to watch Armstrong? You know, you'd say Armstrong.
If you
want to
see the hitting and not getting hit, and getting hit and taking it and giving back and make them miss, make them pay, the science of boxing, Henry Armstrong's the guy.
Yeah.
You know,
he
could take a shot, too. Henry Armstrong could take a punch now.
Yeah, well, he only was stopped
many
twice.
Many times in those. Yeah, he could take a shot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, he cut a little bit, but that was his style. You know, he came in, you know, low. He always had it in a crouch position and, you know, like a Dempsey type thing, and very aggressive. And, you know, he would take a couple shots just to get one in. But, you know, after a while, you know, if you throw 100 punches every round, you know, I mean, you're going to wear the guy down. And, you know, it's all, you know, who's the fittest? And, you know, Armstrong was always in shape. And, you know, it was just something that, you know, he learned from, you know, right in the beginning, because the first fight he ever had, you know, he wasn't in shape, and, you know, he got stopped. So, but,
you know, a lot
like
of people get Henry Armstrong mixed up with Henry Hammer and Henry Hank.
Oh,
you know,
I used to like that guy. Yeah,
his
grandson just won the title. You know,
yeah, he did. He did. He just won the title.
Yeah. Yeah, Henry Hank, I always remember him leaning back, like, avoiding punches. I mean, you know, he had a style, like, you know, he had his hands down, and, you know, he lured a person in. He was an exciting fighter, too. I mean, maybe it's the name Henry, you know. Henry rings a bell.
There you go, Henry. There
you go.
Hey, you better watch out for the half cop. He's been in the gyms as a young man. You know, we might find some records of half cup knocking some guys out, you know, back in the day. So he was there. Henry was there hanging in the gyms. So, yeah, I had the pleasure up in Michigan to be around Hammer and Henry Hank. The funny thing, we were, when I was training fighters up there in Michigan for Johnny Ace, you know, guy, he come in there and these guys said, this guy all the time around here saying he was this and he was that. I said, who are you talking about? He said, this guy coming in the door right now. I said, that guy right there. I said, he was a bad mamma Jim. What's that, man? That's a Hammer and Henry Hank, man. Are you
kidding? Yeah.
Yeah, you know how when guys get older, they start hanging around the gym. Guys don't, because they're in their presence all the time, they don't believe the war story.
I know. Well, yeah, he had almost 100 fights, Henry Hank. And like I said, he didn't lose until later on in his career. I think he was only stopped once in his career, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Bob Foster stopped him at a TKO.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I remember fights with him and with Dick Tiger and Genius Armstrong and stuff like that. I mean, and he was, you know, he was a good fighter. You know, I think, you know, everybody loved to see him fight on TV, on the tube and everything like this.
Yeah.
And, so he was,
But Henry Armstrong was really, really something special in his time. during that period.
He was somebody that you would love to see fight. You know, for a little guy, you know the glamour, you know, and division at that time was the heavyweights, and then it was you know Joe Louis. And if you're not going to see Joe Louis, you'd have to look down to the welterweight division and see Henry Armstrong. You know, I mean, that would be, you know, the two people at that time in the late 30s that everybody wanted to see fight. I mean, you know, and, you know, Louis didn't fight that much. I mean, he did defend his title quite a bit in the early, late 30s and early 40s. But Armstrong, I mean, he fought like every other week. You know, I mean, he was just... you know, somebody that, you know, he was a crowd pleaser. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but how was that fight with I think the former world champion Benny? I think it Benny Brass that he fought a former world champion Armstrong fought, right?
He fought quite a few world champions. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Benny Bratt, I don't think he fought. He beat, like, Baby Asmani, Midget Wargast, Mike Belois, Frankie Kick, Click, Benny Bass, Saran.
Yeah, there you go,
Chalky
Benny
Wright.
Bass, yeah.
Yeah, Benny Bass. Mm-hmm. Oh, Benny Bass, he was a great fighter. In fact, Jack Dempsey would say that he was the best fighter he's seen. I mean, it's pound for pound. That, you know, that's what he said years ago. I mean, you know, maybe that changed as time went on. But Benny Bass, you know, he was called a fish because Benny Bass, you know, and Bass is a fish.
Yeah.
So his nickname was the fish. You know, but, you know, Armstrong, you know, beat all these guys. I mean, it was just, you know, Tippi Larkin, Sammy Angott, you know, Lou Jenkins, you know, so, you know, it, you know, like I said, there aren't too many people that would rate, you know, Armstrong lower than, let's say, number five, you know, pound for pound. And most people rate him either two or three. And, you know, like I said, you know, winning, you know, three titles at the same time. I mean, today's day and age, you know, I mean, he would probably be five world, you know, he'd probably win the junior lightweight, then the lightweight, then junior welterweight, then the welterweight. I mean, you know, maybe probably even the junior middleweight division he'd probably win, you know, because he's that good.
And he probably would have took up on Joe Louis offering win for the heavyweight title.
Hey, you never know, you know. I mean, you know, these little guys give you a lot of trouble. You know,
you got that right. You know, ask Joe Louis. Somebody was giving him heck until Joe Louis finally caught up with him. But before that, Joe Louis was getting his tail whooped.
Yeah, well, that was Billy Conn. You know, when he says he can run but he can't hide. You know, and Conn. I think Conn had, you know, maybe 60 or 70 fights at the time, and only had 13 knockouts. And there he is. I mean, he almost floored Louis in that 12th round. And then in the 13th round, he figured I could knock this guy out. And he stood toe to toe with one of the greatest punchers of all time. I mean, that's the Irish in him. You know, he wanted to knock the guy out.
He got cocky, stood the same smart.
Yeah.
He got cocky.
Yeah, I know. Years later, you know, Conn says, "Why didn't you let me have the bout? You know, I could have won. Then a few months later, you could have took it back." And he says, "Well, you had it for 12 rounds." So, you know, so, that's good enough. You know, so it, you know, a little comical stuff. But you know, like I said, you know, I know IBRO is doing another. That's the International Boxing Research Organization is doing another poll on who the greatest fighters are in each division. And, you know, I'd be very surprised if, you know, Armstrong wasn't rated in the top five, you know, pound for pound. He's probably going to be rated, you know, we have to rate the top 20 in each division. Even most of the junior champ divisions, which is kind of hard. But I would be kind of surprised if Armstrong wasn't rated in the featherweight, lightweight, and welterweight divisions. I mean, he's probably going to be, well, him and maybe Pacquiao. Well, today's day and age, you know, like Pacquiao, he went from, you know, flyweight all the way up, you know, welterweight division. I mean, he might be rated also, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, the so-called experts, you know, rate all these guys. And it's hard. It's gotten harder and harder.
It's difficult.
Because, you know, what do you do? You know, Mayweather, you know, what division do you put him in? And they tell you you could put him in from the featherweight all the way up to, you know, junior middleweight if you want to. You know, and I'm saying, gee, you know, it's kind of hard doing that. You know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You know,
but when you have the knowledge that you have, and we like to tell people that are listening to the World Boxing Review, you know, BoxRec does an excellent job of fighters' records and things like that. Go check that website out, BoxRec.
I'm actually one of the editors on
it.
Yeah, I'm actually one of the editors on BoxRec, and I put, you know, thousands of records in, and you know, it is very good. I mean, it's not 100% accurate, you know, because, you know,
it's always
some
error.
Yeah, there's always an error.
There's always
here, but
a margin
for
error.
Yeah,
for
it's a lot more accurate than any other site I've seen. You know, and the thing is that with the newspaper decisions, that's the hardest. I mean, you know, if I'm fighting you, Aaron, and you're from Newark, New Jersey, and I'm from Paterson, New Jersey, the Paterson papers might have me winning, and the Newark papers might have you winning. So how do you put it down? You know, I mean,
right.
that's what's wrong with the newspaper decisions. That's why you got to go through a couple more newspapers and see the consensus. You know, you get about four or five of them, but that takes time. I mean, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it takes
to
time
to
research.
Yeah.
You do an excellent job of that, even with your trivial things that you do, Henry. And we're just happy to have you on the show. But we got 60 seconds. Bob,
there you go.
with any questions for Henry Armstrong, the Henry Haskop.
Oh, no. Hey, we're running out of time anyway, but that was great, really. I kept thinking of questions, and you kept answering them. So, before I got the questions out. No, very good. No, that was enjoyable.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I messed up on the 58 fights. I was trying to think. I know it was Ted Kidd Lewis, and I said Jackie Kidd Berg. For some reason, I get the two mixed up, the names, but, you know, Ted Kidd Lewis is the one that had 58 fights.
Too many people
year.
Caught that, yeah.
You're in as young as you used to be, but you're as sharp as you always are. So, you know, if you don't catch it now, you'll catch it later on. It just takes a little time. The more older you get, the you know, it catches up with you. It catches up with me, too, at times. But we'd like to thank you, Henry, for doing Henry Armstrong. What a great job. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions, the world-famous radio aficionado Bob Murray, and our boxing historian, Henry Haskop. Tune in next Saturday, 11 to 12, every Saturday.
Thank you again. See you later.
Thank you.